Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Hello and welcome to the Transfer Window, the podcast that brings you the news before it becomes news, as well as insight and analysis into everything you're talking about in football. I'm Ian McGarry, and with me, of course, is Dr. Duncan Castles. Today, we will be talking about Wolverhampton Wanderers, Liverpool, Chelsea, Manchester United, amongst other things, as well as, of course, the infamous Donkey Award. It is, of course, awards season. Duncan, we're going to start with Wolves and one of their most effective and certainly most talented players, Pedro Neto, and a potential move away from the club. This has been, of course, a pattern with Wolverhampton Wanderers with regards to selling good players, having brought them in and them having performed very well. We saw it with Diogo Jota already when he went to Liverpool. What can you tell us about Neto and his future?
Yeah, a lot of interest in Pedro Neto since he kind of took over from Diogo Jota before he moved to Liverpool and was getting more starting time than Jota, one of the reasons why Jota was unhappy and seeking a move and obviously got a major step up. I can tell you there was very significant interest in him last summer from some of the top clubs in Europe, Juventus in particular, were extremely keen to bring him to Italy. Had, I'm told, everything in place to do a deal for a substantial transfer fee, but Wolves and their Chinese owners decided not to take that money because the deal was heavily performance related. As we know, Juventus had financial fair play issues and they wanted to stack the transfer fee with bonuses for winning Serie A, bonuses for reaching the Champions League, etc. And Wolves wanted guaranteed cash in the way they got from Liverpool, although that Jota deal, remember, not all of the money paid in the first summer, very much staged over the course of the transfer, but the transfer fee itself was primarily fixed for Wolves. One of the clubs that are interested and have been interested in Pedro Neto in England are Manchester City. I'm told that when they were watching, paying attention to Adama Traore last season and spending time in Wolves games, as Neto was becoming more of a fixture in the team, they started to see the quality of his play and considered that he might be a better fit for their team than Traore, and they continue to hold an interest. I'm also told that Manchester United have been observing the player and looking at him as whether he would be an option for them in the right wing position. He basically turned into their most important attacker this season. Obviously, they've been without Raul Jimenez for most of it and had a very difficult season for obvious reasons because they've lost that player who was scoring so many goals for them and so effective, not just as an attacker, but I think as a defender from the front. But Neto has scored the most goals of any player in Wolves squad this season, 5 Premier League goals, also the most assists, 5 assists. He's almost their most used player. Only Connor Cody has played more minutes of the outfield players for them this season. The question then is, how much will the transfer fee be? I'm told it will not be cheap, partly because of the way that Neto came to the club from Lazio. in 2019. He was signed on a joint deal with his fellow Portuguese player Bruno Jordão, who'd actually left Portugal, Braga, to go to Lazio in a joint deal to Lazio. The total price of that transfer was 27 million euros. Jordão hasn't really established himself as being worth very much and has now moved away from Wolves. So Wolves want to get their profit from the Neto deal. So therefore you can have a guess at how much money they will be asking for a transfer fee, especially if he ends up being the principal player that they can move in this window. I'm told that they haven't made a decision on numbers yet, that the owners, although they're open to selling if the money is right, they want to wait until the end of the Premier League season to put a price on the player. I think also wait and see how the market, the summer's market, evolves, how much money there's going to be available for players and how much they could get for player Neto's quality, which clubs exactly are going to be prepared to make bids. They're in a strong position in terms of age. He's just 21. He's already a full Portugal international. And they gave him a new contract in November that runs until 2025. So they have all the boxes ticked in terms of extracting a big transfer fee. And now they're kind of in a waiting game to see where things are at the end of the season, which clubs come in for them and whether they can get the kind of amounts of money that they would want to sell their most effective attacker or most effective fit attacker and reinvest elsewhere in the team after what's been, compared to their first two seasons in the Premier League, a very disappointing season with them currently in 13th place in the division.
This has become quite a good business plan in terms of Wolves. Obviously, they have the major influence of Jorge Mendes, the agent, and his Justafoot company, who are doing recruitment in the majority of cases, selling players who they brought in at a lesser price. This, do we think, is it going to be a pattern that continues, Duncan, or will Wolves at some point say, no, we need to keep improving the team and keep our best players rather than sell them when their value is high?
When they first went up to the Premier League, they would, I'm told, have spent more money on transfers if it wasn't for the Premier League financial fair play rules. So they were restricted in what they could do in the market because they had to keep themselves in bounds in terms of recruitment expenditure. And, you know, that is still a factor for them. But it's always been central to their plan is to recruit well. So the using Justafoot, using Jorge Mendes, the idea is you get players like Neto, you get players like Ruben Neves, you get players like Diogo Jota at good prices with a framework in place, with a manager who is good at developing players and realizes the importance of bringing these players through the first team and increasing their value, with the idea being that you will sell some of them on and reinvest in more young talents, rapidly increase their value and get a better and better team year by year. The owners have talked about their aim being to reach the Champions League, to do what Manchester City have done. But I think they will do that in a steady pattern. It's not we're going to jump in and do it the way Manchester City did and spend, go to the top of the transfer market immediately in terms of buys, because they simply can't do that under current regulations. So it has to be intelligent and staged. And, you know, they've taken a hit, I think, over the last season because of the injury to Raul Jimenez and because of COVID, which prevented the kind of big deal that they were expecting to do last summer. And Adama Traore was the player that they were marketing. And they had a lot of interest in because of the season he had. And they were talking at one point of their asking price being 150 million euros, or realistically, it would probably have been 100 million euros. So that would have been the move for the summer. That didn't happen. They had the possibility to do Neto instead. And as I've explained, again, it wasn't structured in a way that that worked for them. So they've stepped aside from it, and now they wait till this summer and hope that the impact of COVID has diminished, and there will be enough money from one of those big clubs to take a player on the pricing that they expect for their better players.
And of course, the wonderful thing about this player is that, in the words of the great Ruud Gullit, 40 million? Is that netto? Sorry for the pun. Speaking of the former Chelsea legend, we move on to the Stamford Bridge Club with regards to their summer transfer window plans. Is our information, Duncan, that Chelsea intend to sell this summer, having invested heavily to the extent of £213 million last summer in rebuilding and, of course, recruiting to the squad? It is our information that a very well-known agent has been asked to market certain players, the most prominent being Hakim Ziyech, who of course has not been at the club very long from his move to Ajax, but who Thomas Tuchel believes that the squad is top heavy in attacking midfielders, and that Ziyech is probably the most expendable should they be able to recoup some of the investment in him, and as well as trying to recognise and realise the value of Thiago Tomori, who is currently on loan at AC Milan and who have a option to buy for €26 million, but also at least two or three fringe players are certainly available for transfer. And Tuchel has indicated that he would like to bring in at least two players with regards to balancing out his squad, mainly in defence rather than up top, where, as I said, he believes that they are very well suited at the moment. It seems to me, Duncan, like a sensible move with regards to how the squad is right now. As I said, it doesn't seem to have a lot of balance. Lots of attacking players, not so many defending players. Would you see it being a bit of a surprise to sell Ziyech, given his very short time at the club, and also the fact that he's considered to be one of a very talented set of attacking midfielders in Europe?
Look, I think it's interesting that your friend Tom Tuchel has come into the Chelsea squad and come to the conclusion about it that his predecessor Frank Lampard had when that recruitment process was in place, and that Marina Granovskaya was focusing on attacking players, particularly attacking midfielders, and spending too much of the budget on those players where they already had a lot of strength last season. So rationally, yes, you would, if you want to raise money to invest elsewhere, and we know that there's a strong interest in signing Erling Haaland, and we know that there's a need for a centre back to improve the defence, then you would let one of the attacking midfielders go. It would be strange to sell Kai Havertz because there's so much invested in him in terms of finances and I guess Granovskaya's pride. So Ziyech is older from that group. Again, you'd have the option of Christian Pulisic, but Pulisic, you're younger, a lot of potential, and try and retain him in the squad if possible. So there is a logic if you have to sell one to try and sell Ziyech. But perhaps not the easiest deal to do. He's played 15 Premier League matches for Chelsea so far, one goal, three assists, done a bit better in the Champions League where he has two goals, obviously had injury issues this season. But yeah, look, we said throughout this entire process of Chelsea's recruitment that they weren't balancing the squad well, and they were spending money in one area of the field and neglecting other areas of the field. Tuchel is certainly going to have a lot of influence over this market because of what's happened since he's come in. Appointed January 26th, he still hasn't lost a game. They're in the quarterfinals of the Champions League. They are getting themselves in position to qualify for the Champions League through their league position. They aren't playing the most exciting of football. They're not ticking that box that's always been important for Roman Abramovich at key times for managers of playing attractive football. But they are getting results. And as long as he does that, he will have that period which most Chelsea managers get, where they do get to influence transfers, and they do get to shape the squad. And if I was advising Tuchel, I would say take advantage of it, because it probably won't last for very long. That's the history of the club.
You're absolutely right about that. That's for sure, Duncan. I think Big Tam is certainly trying to do that right now. It is my information that there was a recruitment meeting which included the manager and recruitment team, as well as Marina Granovskaya, last week, in which this was discussed specifically with regards to disposal of players and recruitment of players in certain positions. And Frank Lampard, ironically, had continually lobbied to have a centre half and a right back or left back. Well, of course, he got Ben Chilwell. He was denied what he really wanted in the market, despite getting Thiago Silva as well, who, of course, has spent quite a lot of time out injured up until this point in the season. So Tuchel has decided that, well, I'm not going to be caught out in the same way. I will ask and demand that my needs are met with regards to balancing up the squad and improving the first 11 as well. I think it's interesting that Tomori is on that list of players to be disposed of, because obviously he is on loan at AC Milan, so he's not considered to be first choice. But he was a player who was highly regarded by Lampard and generally as well. So to get rid of him would bring in substantial funds. But as I said, balancing the books with regards to what happened in last summer's window, when the spend was huge by Chelsea standards, although Chelsea are probably the only team in the Premier League who have returned a net profit on transfers in the last decade, which people might think is unusual, because Chelsea always seem to be big spenders. That is the case, that they are in profit over 10 years. Not hugely, but I think to the tune of about £13 million. But that's certainly much better than their rivals in the so-called Big Six in terms of return. And so interesting... as well, Duncan, this week that Roman Abramovich gave a very, very rare interview to Forbes regarding his time at the club and his continuing interest at a time when he has not attended a game at Stamford Bridge in 3 years. It's, again, my information that he still does attend board meetings via video link and has approved Tuchel's plans for this summer. And Marina Granovskaya has as well said that, yes, they will market the players that we've mentioned, along with two or three other fringe players, in order to offset any further investment. So looks like Chelsea are going to continue in their gearing up to challenge for Premier League title, Champions League, obviously, should they get there next season. Mm-hmm. Liverpool haven't had their problems to seek with regards to central defence, of course. They have tried to blood young players, as well as looking at bringing in players to recruit. They have had a long-standing interest in the Napoli centre-back Kalidou Koulibaly, which we have reported on a podcast in detail over the last year. It is our understanding that an informal offer to begin with of 40 million euros plus add-ons has been made for the player, who's certainly available, and that they look, certainly Jurgen Klopp looks at him as being a very, very suitable partner for Virgil van Dijk, who is expected to return before the start of next season and do pre-season with Liverpool as well. Koulibaly was once the talk of the town, Duncan, with regards to the Premier League, and had interest from Manchester City and Manchester United. But Liverpool look to be leading the race now in a reduced price market for a player. Okay, he's 29, but that does also give him the advantage of the experience, and he will be able to hit the ground running with regards to coming in to a new club and obviously, as I said, partnering Van Dijk in what could be quite a significant, in terms of strength and depth of partnership, at the heart of the Liverpool defence.
Certainly a different grade of signing to Ozan Kabak, who they took on loan from bottom of the Bundesliga Schalke in January, or Ben Davis, who they took for 2 million from Preston. Kabak doesn't look like the long-term solution for Liverpool, because his strength is more holding on the ball and passing rather than the aggressive kind of defending and the ability to play a very high line that's been central to Jurgen Klopp's tactics with Van Dijk and the team. He is available. He's, as you say, very close to moving last summer. In fact, was actually announced on the Manchester City webpage on the same day they bought Ruben Dias. So a quick change of content from the Manchester City media staff on that one, which doesn't come as a surprise because Koulibaly thought he was going to be going to Manchester City in the summer. Then Benfica reduced their asking price on Ruben Dias, who'd been a long-standing target of City. Story we broke on the podcast well before that transfer happened. And Dias was available at a cheaper transfer fee, cheaper salary, and was a younger player. So I think it became an easy decision for City to make in the end. Koulibaly, as you say, is for sale. Napoli made him their highest earner in September 2018 in order to retain him for a period while they targeted the Serie A title, and also to increase his value in the market. They were at one point asking for over 100 million euros for the player. He's on a salary of 6 million euros net. And that's become a bit of a millstone for the club. Therefore, they're ready to sell him this summer, and the asking price has come down. And yes, there will be interest from top clubs in signing a ready-made centre-back who has that experience at the very highest level, can fit into the team and does look like a player who would work in the Premier League with his physicality, combined with that experience.
Do you think Manchester United might retain their interest in the player, Duncan, because clearly they still have issues at the centre back position, even if Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's love child, Lindelof, is the preferred choice to partner Harry Maguire. We've reported on the podcast that Maguire would prefer to have a more commanding partner in the middle necessarily, and preferably someone who understands English. I know that Lindelof certainly does, and I'm not sure about Koulibaly, but to that end, I think that Koulibaly would be a very good signing for Manchester United in terms of his ability to defend aggressively, especially in the air, but also in the tackle as well. He's very good at closing down space and also good at timing tackles. He's got more speed and agility than Maguire has. Someone said to me this week that when they saw the crisis in the Suez Canal, they thought it was Harry Maguire who had run aground.
I think that boat in the Suez Canal is more effective at blocking the channels than Harry Maguire. But
no! That's an own goal. I just set you up for that one.
Yeah, I mean, as you reported a couple of weeks ago, Maguire proposing that he gets a partner who knows the Premier League and is a native English speaker because he feels that there are some communication issues with his current partners. Look, if you're going for finished product and you're going top of the market in terms of salary, then Koulibaly would make sense for Manchester United. But it's been a while since they've gone for a player who will be, I mean, Koulibaly will be 30 in June. So that has not been their transfer policy in recent windows. Certainly the PR around.
Well, they signed Cavani, who's 34.
Yeah, on a 1 year deal, where they can cut it at the end of this season, free transfer, option to retain for a second season. The long-term transfers have been in younger players, and you have the cultural reboot PR story that they're favoring English or, UK players, and they're favouring younger players, and it's a steady process of development. Certainly the individuals they're looking at, guys like Pau Torres, Jules Koundé, are younger defenders, the ones that are based overseas, and fit more with that strategy and would be cheaper from a wage perspective. So I don't see them moving for Koulibaly. That's not the sense I'm getting that they would enter the market for the finished product. I mean, it might make more sense to sell Maguire if they could find a buyer in the Premier League. I think that would be very difficult in the present market conditions, and bring Koulibaly in as a replacement as the leader of the defence. But there is so much invested in Maguire working for them, because Solskjaer and Woodward made him the most expensive defender in the history of the game, that I do not see them going down that line.
And also the club captain, Duncan, so that is a difficult sale.
Given the captaincy as well, so yeah, it's the team is being organised around him. Solskjaer plays Fred and McTominay as his first two choices in what he describes as a back six, to protect that defence. And he has to protect the defence, because we all know from watching Maguire doing his Suez Canal act through these two seasons at Manchester United, that once the ball goes in behind him, he can't catch up. The striker's away, and it's a chance on goal.
Very true. So Liverpool are, as I said, in pole position to sign Koulibaly, given that Manchester City, as Duncan has said, opted for Ruben Dias, and that Manchester United don't appear to be in the market for the player. One of the mysteries of the season so far, Duncan, has been at Manchester United in terms of their recruitment, and Donny van de Beek. There's been lots of speculation about, first of all, why they signed him at all, and secondly, why his game time has been so short since his move from Ajax. I've been told, and it has been speculated as well by some ex-Manchester United players, that the reason that Van de Beek was signed was that they expected Paul Pogba to leave Old Trafford. And so Van de Beek, as a creative midfielder who could play flexibly at 6, 8 or 10, would be a good replacement for Pogba, who of course didn't leave. And now Van de Beek has been left effectively on the bench because the way that Solskjaer is playing in terms of setting up his team, and also the fact that Pogba remains at the club, has been the case that he's not had the same starting influence that he was basically first on the team sheet at Ajax. You've got some information, Duncan, on how Van de Beek feels about that and what he feels his place, stroke position for the future might be.
Yeah, look, it's quite remarkable because this is a very expensive transfer, particularly in a COVID environment. As we reported, as was generally known for a while, that Real Madrid would have taken him. Last summer, they had a deal in place with the player. They weren't able to pay the money Ajax wanted because of financial restrictions in Spain. So Manchester United moved in and took advantage in what looked like a very astute move by United to get a player that I don't think they would have got in normal circumstances, and someone who had been an excellent performer for Ajax. As you say, can play as a holding midfielder, as a box-to-box number 8, and as a number 10. Best position, according to people at Ajax, is a number 10. And they actually, when I was talking to them about the deal, they said, look, he's a better player in that position than Bruno Fernandes or Paul Pogba. And if he gets his chance, he will take advantage and demonstrate that. However, you look at what's happened. He is amongst that Manchester United squad. He is number 20 in Premier League minutes. He's made just 2 Premier League starts in the season. He's had 317 minutes in total. Nemanja Matic, who's, you know, second bottom of the list of, you know, 6 international class central midfielders that Solskjaer has to choose from, has 913 minutes. So he's been used almost 3 times as much as Van de Beek. Even Juan Mata has more Premier League minutes than Van de Beek this season. Quite remarkable, given that Mata's status within the club now and the investment that was made in Van de Beek. I've been asking how he has been dealing with it from other Manchester United players, and they say, look, he's extremely professional. He's been training very well. He doesn't come across as angry. But the sense they get is that he's confused as to why Manchester United would make the investment they did in signing him and then use him, as I think is demonstrated by the selections, essentially as a backup for Bruno Fernandes. So the only time he gets a start at number 10 is when Bruno Fernandes is rested, which, as we know, is not often, because Bruno Fernandes is the most important player to the team and certainly the most important player to the attack, provides the creativity. So he's effectively the backup number 10 to the player who's first on the team sheet, therefore gets hardly any minutes. We just talked about Fred and Scott McTominay being used to protect Maguire. I think that's damaged him, because Solskjaer obviously doesn't feel he can use Van de Beek as one of those two holding midfielders in front of the defence. So in a sense, he's become another victim of Solskjaer being wedded to Maguire. What's he going to do? That's harder to judge. What I'm told is that he's thinking about whether the right thing to do would be to ask for a move and leave Manchester United, go to somewhere where he gets to play properly. But only thinking about it. It's not the case, I'm told, that he's actually gone and requested to leave the club. A decision still to be made on his part over what the right thing to do is this summer.
Culturally, the Dutch are quite pragmatic in the general sense, so it would make a sense that Van de Beek would see it out for maybe another season. with regards to trying to find a place in the first team at Manchester United. And of course, the summer window will bring changes as well, with lots of different situations going on.
Well, Paul Pogba wants to leave. Whether he can get that move is another matter, but he would like to go to Real Madrid. Ironically, the place that Van de Beek almost went to. However, Manchester United are looking for a new midfielder, and they're looking for a player who can play as a number six and also play as a box-to-box number eight. So if Pogba goes, there will be more competition for a place.
Seems odd that they would look for someone else when Van de Beek's already there. Clearly has talent, clearly has experience, and yet, I mean, does Solskjaer just not trust him?
The evidence from the selections are exactly that. You can't go any further than him being 20th on the Manchester United squad list for Premier League minutes. It's not the case that he's been injured for large periods of the season. He's just not been chosen. And as we've just reported there, his feeling is that Solskjaer's perception of him is as a backup, a reserve to Bruno Fernandes. So his perception is that Solskjaer only trusts him to play as a number 10 and only sees him as a number 10, which is really strange given his career track record and the flexibility and his ability to play those positions at Ajax and demonstrate at the very highest level how good he is at playing those positions, you know, at a level higher than Manchester United have achieved in the Champions League for many years now. Van de Beek's proven, but the current manager using him doesn't see him as appropriate to play at number eight or number six.
Well, it says something also, Duncan, about Manchester United's recruitment process, that a player they paid around €40 million for is not trusted and is not first choice and is not even considered as first choice. It sort of says to me that Solskjaer did not have much of an input on his recruitment in the first place.
Possibly, or he was happy with the idea of bringing a quality player in and then got to work with him and decided he didn't fit his plan. You have Paul Pogba there, and there was a possibility that Paul Pogba wouldn't stay last summer. And Solskjaer, I have to say, has done a good job in taking advantage of Pogba's willingness to demonstrate his quality and desire to earn that move elsewhere, and got some very good performances out of Pogba this season. Now, if you have Pogba there playing in the way he is playing, then I guess you use Paul Pogba. I think the more telling one is his faith in Fred and Scott McTominay. And you know, if you look at the big games Manchester United play, and sometimes if you look at the less important games Manchester United play, it's very clear that Solskjaer's preference is to have those two sweeping and playing with, you know, they have a lot of mobility, a lot of energy, and do a lot of work for him, but he likes having those two in front of his defence, and that closes down the other option for a place for Van de Beek.
Faith and Thread sounds like a 90s pop duo to me, Duncan. this is indeed too sexy for my shirt or whatever. The second podcast from the transfer window this week, which of course gives us the Donkey Award. And with the BAFTAs and Oscars imminent, we of course like to join in the awards season. And this week, we are dedicating the Donkey to the great Zlatan, inverted commas, 8 million, you say, Ibrahimovic, for comebacks in football after he appeared for the first time in 5 years for the Sweden national team this week. And of course, it wouldn't have been Zlatan if he hadn't been involved in the goal that won them their World Cup qualifier. So the Zlatan Ibrahimovic Award for successful comebacks or not successful comebacks is here. I'm just going to open the golden envelope. There we go. Okay, Duncan, you have three to choose from. Leo Messi, who was retired from international football, I think, on at least two occasions from the Argentinian national team and then came back, but still hasn't won a trophy with them. Diego Maradona, probably my favourite, actually, who, having not played for 3 years for Argentina, appeared in the 1994 World Cup. And, of course, that infamous game against Nigeria where he produced two assists and, in doing so, made the mad eyes at the camera, effectively inviting FIFA's drug testers to take him into the room and say, "Diego, do you mind if you give ourselves a sample, please, because you look a bit off your face." And the third one, which is kind of as good as Maradona, is Andy Carroll, when he went back to Newcastle United, having left firstly for Liverpool and then for West Ham United. Duncan, it's up to you who you want to choose for this particular donkey. Give us your thoughts.
Well, let's hope the great Zlatan's comeback is more successful than the three you've presented to us. As you say, Messi has taken a couple of absences from the Argentina international team and then returned to pursue that dream of winning a major trophy with the Argentina national team, and is running out of chances to actually do it and demonstrate that he can perform at the levels, the amazing levels he has delivered at Barcelona amidst a different group of players. Maradona, a good candidate with that return, I think, after 3 years absence from the Argentina national team. And a bit of glory at the World Cup until the drug testers took him away and removed him from the tournament. But against those two Argentine legends, I think I'm going to go for the Geordie legend. That's Andy Carroll. In the second year of his comeback at Newcastle United, now played 40 games across those two seasons and scored one goal, which is actually worse numbers than he produced at Liverpool after that close to record transfer coming in place of Fernando Torres, which is quite an achievement to get worse numbers than he demonstrated when he was with Liverpool.
I've scored more goals in the last year than Andy Carroll, to be fair. Albeit against lesser opposition.
Your son. Your 10-year-old son?
No. He's well, one's 13, the other one's 18. So let's not exaggerate.
Okay.
So Andy Carroll wins this week's Donkey Award, which of course is the Zlatan Ibrahimovic 8 million, you say. And if you wonder what that reference is, please Google it. Go to YouTube and type in "I am Zlatan" and watch the cartoon of Zlatan telling Pep it was time for him to leave Barcelona. And you will both be very, very grateful that we gave you the reference, as well as a lot of fun in doing so. This has been the news before it becomes news on the Transfer Window podcast. Please, if you've liked what you've heard, review us and rate us on iTunes or subscribe for free on all of your normal platforms in social media, including YouTube as well. We will be back with you next week. Until then, stay safe, be well, and thanks for listening.